One of them wanted to be the security guy. He claimed he was a security guy.
Is that a one? Welcome to another, what would we say, musty version of Security Guy Radio today, Jarvis? little wet outside, yeah, little rainy.
All right.
I'm a little damp. And Yvonne, just so you know, my hair, I hope it's not as flat as it was last week. Probably more flat because of the rain, I would suppose, but that's the way it goes. Now, I had quite an experience getting here. Did I tell you about this?
Yeah.
All right. So I go outside. You know, I have to Uber around. Here, let me show everybody. Just so everybody knows what's going on. So everybody knows I broke my leg, right? So this is what I have to use. Can we see that?
Mm-hmm.
That's my...
Wow.
That's my little knee tricycle, right? So I have to hop off the front step and get to an Uber. So I go out there, I get this all planned out. You know, it's raining, so I think I'll get there early. So I'm standing in the front yard waiting for the Uber to come, and it starts hailing.
Wow.
Now I'm sitting on this thing with these little rubber wheels in hail, thinking, if I move, that's it. New broken leg, new hospital trip. So that was quite an experience. But the guy came out, picked me up. We got here in time. It was fine. Mm. Then I get here, and I sit down this microphone, and it smells like a transient rubbed his hair on it or something. What is going on with that?
I don't know.
We got to fix that, too. It just things are not working, and then I have to go get another surgery tomorrow for my nose because apparently I fell down because I have an inner ear thing because of my sinuses. Now they're going to fix my sinuses. I'm just falling apart. You know, I turned 55, and I like the free Denny's thing, the discount.
Right.
But I trade that for all this other crap. Just disintegrating at 55 years old. It's ridiculous. I hope your week was better.
Yeah, it was. It was.
All right.
Yeah.
So I can only go like 30 minutes, and my foot fills up with blood. Pretty nasty. Oh, anyway, geez. Who cares about all that stuff? You guys want to hear something exciting. So today we're going to talk about – by the way, am I on Facebook? Because I don't see it.
It should be.
Oh, there it is. Okay, yeah. Good. So remember I went to Black Hat last year? I met a gentleman there named Torsten George, and he's with a company called RiskSense. And we want to get into this cybersecurity. I've been doing more and more shows about this because I think 2017 is the year that we really have to get into taking this seriously. I'm not sure it's been taken that seriously before. They try, but I think this is going to be where cybersecurity really kind of goes to the forefront of our problems. You know, look at the Russian hacking and all that kind of stuff, right? So, oh, by the way, do you like my shirt?
Yeah.
Now, you weren't here last week, but this is my inauguration shirt.
Oh, okay.
Right? It's the Trump. Now, I didn't vote. I didn't vote for either one of those people or anybody for president. I skipped on the president and voted for everybody else. This is not a political statement. It's actually my safety shirt so people don't hit me and run me over in my little tricycle.
Okay.
So I'll wear this until I
good thinking.
Am not infirm. So welcome, Torsten George from RiskSense, risksense.com. Welcome to the show, Torsten. Where are you Skyping in from?
Sunnyvale,
okay. Now, I understand your foot has a little bit of a problem, too. This is a very interesting coincidence.
Yeah, we're almost partner in crimes here. I have a torn ligament, hairline fracture. I'm already wearing my boot for the last 3 months, still 5 weeks to go before they decide if they will do surgery or not. So we're in the same boat here.
Man, it sucks, right? I mean, it's unbelievable. I got mine for 6 months and 4 hours of surgery and 13 pins. Not nice. But the show must go on, so I'm glad we're both here today.
Yeah.
Now, tell us what we're going to do is talk about what RiskSense does. We're talking about your background. And we're going to put this together with some things going on in the news. And I don't want you guys to turn this off because you're saying, oh, that's a computer. I don't understand that. You need to listen, right? Even if you don't get computers, we're going to dumb it down for everybody so we make this a household topic. It really is very important. So give us a little bit about what RiskSense does in general, then tell us about your background.
Sure. RiskSense helps enterprises and governments to reveal their cyber risk exposure across a growing attack surface, then quickly orchestrate remediation, and at the end helps monitor the results. So three simple pillars that help organizations to really minimize their cyber risk exposure. And the way that we're doing it, we're leveraging your existing investments in security tools. We're ingesting these sources to get a view into your security posture. But that's only a first step. We're then contextualizing it, overlaying it with external threat data, and then correlating it with business criticality to really put context to it. And that's the important thing. A lot of time we're too much focused on what's going on in our organization and are not really putting it into context what's really happening in the darknet.
Now, that's a really good point. I think at Black Hat, you gave me three pillars like reveal. And what were those three simple things that made a lot of sense? What were they?
Yeah, it's basically identify, prioritize, and orchestrate.
Yeah.
It's really identifying your risk exposure. And here it's really important to finally break with the traditional rules of just looking at your network layer. We have to understand network layer is important, but the attackers have long moved on. Post-mortem analysis shows that 84% of today's cyber attacks originate at the application layer.
84% are applications now. Wow.
Yeah. So it's really about time. And unfortunately, we have RSA conference coming up. And I can place a bet here that the majority of vendors and even end users will still just talk about endpoints and network. And that's set. I mean, we have a complete growing attack surface. We have so many applications with mobile apps playing a role for a lot of organizations. We have a database layer. We have the human layer. And then not forget, 18 months ago, if you would have asked a security professional if they should get involved when it comes to selecting the next air conditioning systems, they would have shaken their head. They would have said, no, we should not be sitting at the table when it comes to the decision process. But today they have to sit at the table because Internet of Things is changing the entire ecosystem. So really, people have to start looking beyond their network layer and really identify their attack surface that entails mobile devices, that entails Internet of Things, that entails all the applications that they're using, to really gain a more holistic view on what really impacts their organization.
All right, so let's get back to this 85% of the 80. Is at the application layer. Now, this is interesting because back in the day, and let's boil this down to simple things, your network is your, you know, you got a computer and it's got a wire and it goes up to the big computer and those are all wired together and that's your network. Just like Google's network, everybody gets that concept. And right. the old idea was that we're going to put firewalls and protection, and we're going to put monitors and sniffers, and we're going to watch things coming in to my computer before it gets there and say, what? We're stopping it, and that's protection. But now you're saying that really that's shifted, and it's really the applications on your phone that you have, the things you download that contain this. Now, not to name competitors, because I don't think they're really a competitor, but I talked to some people at Black Hat who are on this, because it's something like, tell me if I'm wrong, 80-90% of all code for all apps is public code. It's something people just cut and paste. They don't write their own code originally. They just say, hey, there's some code over there. Let me take that and create my Uber app with it. Is that fair to say?
It's fair to say. And then you have to see the way that we're delivering new applications today has changed completely, correct? We are working with microservices. We have container services. So the way that we duplicate application that we're deploying them has dramatically changed over the last 24 months. So all of this needs to be accounted for when we talk about cybersecurity. But again, we're still focused. We're still kind of grappling with network security. And as you said, how can I set up the right firewall rules? What are my locks? Who's accessing what? But hackers are moving vertically, correct? They come in through the application right. layer and now jump off into your network layer. They're leveraging the human layer when they initially start their attacks. So there are a lot of different aspects that nowadays play a role. And we haven't broadened when it comes to our defense mechanism. We haven't broadened our view there while the hackers have long time moved on.
Now, how does this apply to, let's see, who wrote me an email the other day? Vernon Hills High School in Chicago, right? What's a blue ribbon school? Some people there listen to the show. And somebody's writing me an email a couple weeks ago about, you know, their computer's getting hacked and stalkers and all this kind of stuff. How does it apply to the level of the average person? Are they really aware that that app for Match.com or Uber or whatever they're using is vulnerable? Or are they thinking, you know what, Match.com's taking care of that. Facebook's taking care of my security, and I don't have to worry about it. What could you say to the average end user, not as an endpoint point, but as an app user? How vulnerable are they and not know it?
They're extremely vulnerable. I mean, even commercial applications that are distributed via the iPhone store or other stores include vulnerabilities that can be leveraged. I mean, Wells Fargo, for instance, banking application, it shares some information as it relates to your location. If I'm a government employee and I'm traveling on sensitive business, I definitely would not like to share where I am in the world.
Right.
If I'm using this application on my phone, I inherently have that exposure. So it's I think we built a specific trust level with mobile applications where we say we're leaving the security to the app stores and we're getting told that they're cross-checked and everything is fine. But again, we cannot forget that each vulnerability is created by human beings. So inherently, there is a risk that their vulnerability included, be it by mistake or be it, as you mentioned, that we're using open source libraries that might have flaws in it. And inherently, I'm transferring this over into my application.
Now, before the show, we were talking about some news. Tell me about that, the news story we were talking about on how this is becoming so topical. Because I heard at a couple of trade shows that 2017 is supposed to be the year where cybersecurity really kind of gets it and starts catching on.
Yeah, I mean, we already saw, I think the watershed event was Target. After the Target breach, there were a lot of lawsuits, and finally the courts were looking at liability, and they kind of threw cybersecurity insurance out of the window and said, well, you're responsible. If you're not doing the right things, if you don't have the right security measures in place, we will hold you accountable. And since then, you have seen a dramatic shift that security traditionally has been seen to be under control of security ops and IT, but now it really reached the C-suite and the board level. And last week, the World Economic Forum released a security toolkit for boards, for director of boards, where they outlined 10 principles how to really operationalize the cybersecurity mentor in organization. And the good thing about this framework that they delivered is that they're saying it's not about cybersecurity, but they go one step further, and at RiskSense we're propagating this, it's about cyber risk management. Of course, when I look just at my cybersecurity exposure, I'm looking at my internal security posture, and that's not sufficient. We talked at Black Hat a little bit about it. The Poodle vulnerability in 2014 was a perfect example. It was rated at the time it was announced at a CVE value of 5.5, and most organizations deal with hundreds of thousands of vulnerabilities, so they're not fixing anything below a value of 7.
No.
So they ignored Poodle. Many of organizations ignore Poodle. So they look core at their internal security exposure. It's a 5.5. Yeah, we have it, but we don't see it as a high priority. If they would have put it into the context of the real threat exposure, they would have changed their mind. Because if they would have known that at that particular time, there were hundreds of thousands live attacks that exploited that vulnerability, suddenly your perception of risk changes. So it's really about risk, and risk is made up of three factors. It's your internal security posture. It's the external threats that could reach your internal gaps and expose you, but also a big role and often forgotten is business criticality. If you don't know the difference between a coffee server that keeps your employees awake and an email server that keeps your business running, you're most likely misaligning your resources and assign them to things that don't require fixing immediately. So risk is really the center point, and that's the good thing that the World Economic Forum framework really stresses and emphasizes, that it's not about cybersecurity, it's about cyber risk management.
Now, these are great points, and my small security guy radio brain has been shrinking as you speak because there's so much to absorb. But let's go back to I can't say that word, drivers, help me out. Operationalization. Did I get it right? All right. So here's how I would have done that. I probably did do it in physical security, but I didn't know I was doing it. And tell me if this is what it means. We at Fox, Fox and Disney, we tried to incorporate security, as part of the culture. So at Disney, we had hosts, not guards, because hosts invited people to speak to you, right? And at Fox, we gave little speeches at lunch, or we went around and helped people, or we did other things that weren't security related per se. And we tried to create an image of being helpful. And that fit nicely into the operation of production. We didn't want to slow down production or hinder production, because that's all about get it in the door, produce it, and get it to the theater. And it's a production line, right? And that's kind of what we did for physical. And I can see this being more effective in the cybersecurity, because as you said, if I just worry about plugging the leaks and saying, oh, well, you know, that risk is a low risk and it has a low impact, I'm not going to worry about it. But what we used to say is that's a low probability, but if it's a high impact, we did something about it. Are you suggesting that when they had risks in cyber years ago that were low probability but high impact, they just said, well, let's just go with the low probability and not worry about it? Is that kind of what they were doing?
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, for many, many years, organizations were driven by a checkbox mentality, compliance-driven approach that was dictated by industry standards or by regulators, correct? And so they tried to take shortcuts. They tried to get to their certification. And we all heard from a lot of people saying, well, if I comply, then I'm secure. As a security professional, you know this is not true. You can't take shortcuts. You really have to prioritize things based on the risk for your organization, based on the business impact. And I think over the last 36 months, what we have seen in the organization is a cultural change. And it's partially triggered by new incoming CISOs that are coming more from a business background, and therefore are asking more business-related questions, and not just how many vulnerabilities are we facing, but really how does that impact our operations? Can we still serve our partners? Can we still serve our customers if this scenario occurs? And so it is something that we have seen as a shift, but it's something that happens very slowly. I have an example. A friend of mine works as a VP of compliance and security for a large healthcare company, and she was hired to really embed this transformational process from compliance to risk-based security in the organization. But after 1 year in the job, she kind of called up and said, hey, Torsten, can you come in as an external expert and present that to our board members? Can you present that to our management team? Because when you do things for 20 years the same way, you do a checkbox, you do it in spreadsheets, you're set. And it's very difficult to change your mind and move away to a new approach. So a lot of organizations, they might have the buy-in from the C-suite, but they're still struggling on a day-to-day basis to do that transformation.
So pretend I'm a real radio show, and I have a real server and a lot of fans, and I'm getting hacked, and I'm going to call you up and say, Torsten, you got to come in here and help me. Give me just kind of a layman's approach to what you're going to pitch to me and how RiskSense is going to solve my problems.
Sure. I think fundamentally, independent of RiskSense or not, it's very important to do security awareness. I think research still shows that hackers are leveraging human beings' misbehavior or mistakes that they're making. Phishing attacks are still very, very common. So implementing security awareness programs should be the one-on-one on many organizations, and still many are not following that step. My wife's company is a very good example how to do it. So they conduct ongoing security assessments. They're sending out phishing attacks. If an employee clicks on a link that they shouldn't click on, the entire screen turns red. And then they get a message, you got caught.
Yeah.
And they have a three-strike policy. The third time, they really have to talk with a C-suite member to really make them aware that they're doing the wrong thing. So it's a little bit shaming, but a game approach where they really try to convey that there are particular rules that you should follow as an employee. And it really helps. They were able to dramatically reduce their exposure to phishing attacks. And I think most recent roundtables that we had with CISOs, it showed that this type of approach is really very effective.
That's very effective.
Yeah.
Well, there goes the porn now, Javis. No more porn. Sorry, buddy. Got to cut it out. Now, I remember when this first started at Fox, the internet just came into its being like in the 90s, right? We did was chase people around on gaming sites and porn all day long. The network was used up, and I had to do an investigation on one of them. And I found out that it cost $125 a minute to keep that internet going. This is a serious cost to business. And people are all going to be $125 a minute because all those IT guys, you know, keeping it going. So that's a serious problem. So that is a great approach. And these kind of things are done by independent companies that come in to do these, kind of risk training. It's very, very good.
Yeah. No, you can have very affordable programs that you can roll out. And at the recent roundtable, one of the CISOs admitted he was part of designing this program, and he himself fell for one of the phishing attacks. So it's kind of good. It's a good self-assessment also if you're really following yourself, all these little nitty-gritty details that are outlined in your policies. But it's a good reminder, and it's definitely raising awareness, and that's very important.
All right, so you got my attention. That's the good sales pitch. I want to talk to you some more. What's RiskSense going to do for me that distinguishes you from the other companies as far as looking at this? I like this putting the risk into context, which is – that's a great concept. So explain all that to me.
So I think we're really addressing four major challenges in cybersecurity. Nowadays – if we talk with a prospect, they have deployed your standard tools like vulnerability scanner, asset management, a SIM system. So you have all of these tools in your environment. Unfortunately, these tools are silo-based. So they're not talking with each other. They're producing each 500 pages of reports every week. And then you would have to spend manual labor to try to connect the dots.
Oh, so I might have several vendors on my system helping me with all this stuff. It makes a lot of sense. I didn't think about it that way. Yeah, I might need several different tools. Yeah.
You most likely follow the best of breed approach and not a stack approach. And for instance, go back to Target. Target had the right tools in place. All these tools worked. They had FireEye threw an alert. They had Symantec. They threw alert. But unfortunately, it was just noise. It was so many alerts that came in the direction of the outsourced security ops team that they couldn't really determine which one is now really the important signal that they should be looking at. I always compare it with the needle in the haystack. We're so distracted by the haystack that we're no longer looking at the needles that are hidden in the haystack. And the other challenge is really the scarce workforce that we're facing. According to ISECR, we have 1 million people shortfall in security. And even if we sign up for classes today, we wouldn't fix that problem in the next couple of years. So that puts us at an immediate disadvantage. If we're spending human labor to connect these dots, it takes us a month. The average time it takes to fix a vulnerability is still at 187 days.
That's Jarvis, you got 187 days before I catch you on the porn. Don't worry about it. That's beautiful, buddy. You're still lucky. Now, this shortage on the IT people is huge. Deidre Diamond from CyberSN, she's a professional recruiter, and she tells me it's 1 million to 1.5 million people they need that they don't have to fill these jobs, and there's no end in sight for filling them. It's just not going to happen. This is a very serious problem. That's a very good point you bring up.
So we're still kind of fixated on, oh, we have to handle this with human labor. But the hackers, they use machines to attack us.
Yeah.
So they're already on a complete different level. They're using automation, artificial intelligence, while we're still believing that everything needs to be done with human labor. So we're immediately in a disadvantage. And then the third challenge is really the lack of context. Because even if I figure out something is going on in my organization, I'm not putting it into context of what's really happening in the darknet. What are really hackers doing right now? Because threats are here today and gone in 5 minutes. It's constantly changing, and we have to be aware of this. And you have seen a big spike in interest in threat intelligence. In itself, it's just another data source, meaning you're putting oil into the fire. I already have so many data sources. Now I'm adding another data source. I have to really put everything together and contextualize it and then correlate it with business criticality to really narrow down my view from, instead of looking at 500,000 vulnerabilities, if I contextualize it with threats that are currently ongoing, I might look at 50,000 vulnerabilities. But now if I put it into context of what's really important to my business, I'm looking at 5,000 things, and that's something that's manageable.
Now, I can't manage that. Let me back you up a little bit. That's an interesting point I want to emphasize. So if I add, maybe I'm not using the right terminology, but if I add a product that has, let's say, machine learning, and it takes this data for me and says, okay, now I'm learning all these things and this is going to help me make a decision, it's still another data source. That's a very good point. It's just more stuff you have to figure out what to do with.
Yep.
I hadn't thought about it that way.
And for us, quite frankly, so we deploy what we describe as human interactive machine learning. So artificial intelligence as the overarching umbrella has been discussed as the potential holy grail for cybersecurity over the last few months. There have been a lot of articles written about, you see artificial intelligence summits pop up, but our co-founder of our company and CEO, he once was hired by the government and the intelligence community to look at artificial intelligence as if it's really the holy grail or not. And he came back with the assessment as an unsupervised machine learning methodology, not really. But if you have a human element that defines the scenarios, that defines the initial rules, and then you leverage the machine to look at these rules and look at all the data and do a pattern analysis and learn over and over, then you will have a chance. So for us, it's important when we talk about artificial intelligence to really stress the factor that it's not unsupervised machine learning, it's really human interactive machine learning that plays a role here.
So that's very interesting distinction. I was under the impression that I could teach the machine to make decisions for me after it learned something, but not completely true. If you're fully automated, it's going to learn what it thinks it should, but maybe that's not the right thing. Is that a good way to put it?
Exactly. And you want to do proof of concepts. Once you have a particular finding, a security analyst should do proof of concepts to really validate findings and not just rely on core data sets. And so you need that human element in the loop. And that's why the fear that some security professionals have that the machine could replace the human down the road are not really given. There will always be that intelligence, that human element that will define the scenarios, that will set the particular rules, and then the machine will help with really automating the analysis and looking for patterns and doing the predictive analytics. That is very labor intensive, very number crunchy, technician type thing. We want to hire a security analyst as a strategist, as a risk strategist, and not as a tactician that tries to connect the dots. That's what the machine is good for, but the human is good to lay out the rules, the strategies, initially.
Now, this is a great point. This goes back to physical security.
Yep.
So when we worked with the IT guys, and I had a guy who is – he was one of the people that wrote some of the first public code for Encase, right, where they used to do cyber forensics on computers and stuff. This guy's super smart. We would – his name's Mike O'Brien, Accurate Computer Consulting. And I brought him into Fox in the 90s, and we wrote an entire database that searched for – you know, one phone call out of 500,000, and we found it and cracked a case on it. And he told me once, he goes, you know what? You got to tell me what to do. And I said, well, you know, you're the computer genius. He goes, look, I can write all kinds of code. I don't know what the data means. And I found that an interesting statement. And I said, what do you mean by that? He goes, you know how to catch bad guys, and I know how to write code. I don't know how to catch bad guys. So if you say, here's a phone number, I can't tell you if that means anything. So I think to your point, you have to have the human element working with the computer. And if it's either the physical security guy working with the IT department or working with artificial intelligence to say, you know what, Torsten is never on his computer at 7 o'clock in the morning because he doesn't get here till 10. Something's wrong with that. And that might be missed in a traditional artificial intelligence analysis. It might be considered not a significant threat. But if I was reviewing that data saying, you know, that's an anomaly – because I know Torsten, I can make that decision. And I think this is the key. I think you're onto something with this.
Exactly. I mean, you need to have somebody that defines the factors to look for, correct? It's very simple also to take another vendor example, Splunk, correct? Splunk has become extremely popular, but it's a querying tool. And so you need the person to write the query. You need to have that person have to have an understanding, what do I look for in my logs? What do I really try to retrieve? What are the Boolean elements that I am connecting to really find the results that I'm looking for? So a machine doesn't come up with that. It's a human being that basically has that expertise and the experience. And that's really also something where RiskSense is quite unique from its DNA. We're a spin-off of New Mexico Tech. Not a lot of people know New Mexico Tech is one of the leading educational systems for cybersecurity. A lot of government agencies, large organizations send their recruits to the university to get taught cybersecurity. And so our co-founder was teaching cybersecurity there. And then he basically got tapped by the government agencies and intelligence community to assist them define best practices in cybersecurity. He worked on many projects where he was even part of the founding members of the strike team that went after China, North Korea, and Russia to take their findings and turn it into defensive strategies. So that expertise really went into this product offering that's offered as a software as a service offering. And it's a quite unique story for a security company. You have a lot of companies that are being run, being set up by business people. In our case, we have practitioners that are running these companies. You have the core understanding of what motivates a cyber adversary. What are their motives? What are they looking for? We have a team of exploit writers that every day is doing their own ethical hacking that validates their findings that they retrieve from the darknet. So you have a lot of expertise that is embedded in this offering. So it works very well either to complement your own skill shortage or to complement your existing security analyst and really give you that additional enrichment of data sets that you have internally.
That was an awful lot of stuff to absorb for my small little brain, but it all made sense. Now, I get what you say about your company being founded by, I mean, would a scientist be the wrong word to use? No, that's a good word to use.
Yeah.
All right. So I go to a lot of trade shows, right? I go to ASIS, IC West, and I get invited to these lavish suites, right? shrimp cocktail. You know, shrimp as big as your arm. I mean, this is a lot of money they're spending to convince me that a product is great. And I like all the products, so I'm neutral on that. I never badmouth products. I just present them. And there is a difference between that group, which are started by businessmen and a lot of investors and a lot of money behind it. And by the way, these are great products. No knock on that. But there's a distinction between that and some of the black hat people I spoke to, you know, serious PhD scientists. A little different. Now, scientists aren't great salesmen, unfortunately. That's not their thing sometimes, right? So what is the challenge in sales in this industry? You know, as is in IC West, it's giant parties and, you know, drinking beer and going out and having go-go girls at the booth and all that kind of stuff. But on the science side, if I'm trying to explain some high-end science to a buyer at a major corporation who's just a, you know, not a scientist, how do you translate that? Because I, you know, I kind of get this stuff because I've had a computer since 1984 and I study it and all that kind of thing. But, you know, even as I am pretty well at understanding this, I can imagine the average security guy with his eyes would roll up in his head and say, you know what, let me get somebody else in here to talk about that. How do you challenge that?
I think really boiling it down from a messaging perspective, my entry sentence where we say we reveal your cyber risk exposure, help you quickly orchestrate remediation and monitor the results, that's what really gets the attention of the CISOs. And you really tell them, hey, we're not coming in asking you to replace what you set up over the last decade. We're leveraging, we're enriching your existing infrastructure. That really gets their buy-in. And then when you go more on the technical assessment, you have a point. I mean, there's a lot of marketing messaging, a lot of blurb out there. Unfortunately, there's a lot of misperception on the terminology of risk. You have a lot of players out there that use that terminology loosely.
Right.
And that's kind of a little bit confusing the end users. What we see right now, everybody talks about risk scores. But when you really look at it and say, okay, what are you really scoring? There are a lot of vendors out there that look at your IP addresses that are publicly available. They look at, is your SSL certificate expired, yes or not? So that's your external, it's kind of an inside-out view. But it's just your external exposure, and then they start stipulating, well, if you have your SSL certificate expire, then potentially also your internal security policies are not in shape. It's stipulation. It's really, there's not science behind it, but because they're using the terminology risk, it appears to be more scientific than it is. And so it confuses the end user market. And in general, Momentum Partners, which is an investment company that tracks the cybersecurity market, they put every quarter, they put kind of their momentum snapshot out. And it's a slide with hundreds of vendors on there. And it's really confusing for end users nowadays to kind of say, okay, what do I really still need? I have already a set of tools. What else do I need? I'm already drowning in data. I think really what we talked about, finding what we describe as an orchestration layer to ingest a diverse set of data and then contextualize it and help also with the proactive remediation efforts, that's the next generation of tools that progressive organizations are looking for, because they have most likely deployed the right tools, but now they created a new challenge where they're drowning in the data and they don't know where to start any longer.
So it sounds like these are checklist approaches, and the checklist is a tactic, really a non-scientific tactic based on best practices, and it has a value and it works to some degree. And what you're talking about is looking at this whole thing as a strategy or stratagem. Check my Latin there. Strategy, whatever. Don't send me any letters about my grammar. But anyway, that's different than just saying, okay, I've done my part. I've checked the boxes, and, you know, we don't need RiskSense because I get it all handled. Now, do you find there's a resistance to this because the IT guy, he may think he looks bad because he's looking for outside help? What I heard at Black Hat was more companies were saying, you know what? In the old days, we had an IT guy. He went around and set your Windows 3.0, set it up, and everybody worked and wasn't a risk of all these attacks. And now we have to go outside because that's not our business to protect the network. That's our business is a movie company. Our business is a, you know, production manufacturing plant. So why not outsource it? Where are we in that part of the industry? Are people saying, listen, let's bring in people that know what they're talking about? Or do you find a resistance? I don't want you touching my network, and I'm afraid it's going to screw something up.
I think it depends on the vertical market that you're looking at. I think one of the most advanced are definitely government sector and financial service industry. They have long moved on. They brought in CIOs that are very business oriented. So for them, their thought process is no longer kind of let's work with what's working, but really how can we be more agile? How can we operate more efficiently? How do I launch something in a secure but in a productive manner? And so their view has completely changed. And so they really embedded a thinking of not just tactical views, but more strategic views. And so these verticals are really on the forefront. You have more traditional views in the energy market, unfortunately, which faces probably one of the biggest shortages in security professionals across the entire industry.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. So that I would think would have the highest priority for strategy and coordination with private companies that know what they're doing.
You would think so, because it's critical infrastructure. But on the other hand, they have very diverse, very heterogeneous environments. They were very quickly forced to kind of connect with the internet to kind of share sources with other providers, and security was not really on the forefront of thinking about how to do that. So to protect their environments, a lot of times they're not very progressive. They're still having Windows 95 deployed and all these things. And because they can't compete from a salary perspective, from a coolness factor with the Facebooks and the LinkedIns, for them it has been extremely difficult to attract a cybersecurity talent. A lot of former retired security professionals, they're being hired back as consultants. They're far beyond their retirement age, but they're making good dollars in that industry. But they're less exposed to the newer technologies. So that market, quite frankly, is a little bit behind the curve.
That's very interesting. I interviewed Cisco last year, went to their headquarters up there in San Jose. And I forgot the gentleman's name, but I'll look it up for my next show. But he is in that sector using their Cisco, you know, routers and connectors and all that stuff to help run these power plants and connect everything. I felt good leaving. Just like I said at Black Hat, every time I interviewed somebody, I either felt great or felt terrible after the interview because I felt we're vulnerable. But I felt pretty good about that. What he told me was there are these government regulations is a word, but really it's a government standard that you just have to follow. You have to do all these things if you have an energy plant and comply, and they check on you. And that may be a reason that they're a little behind too, because the government's always a little slow to catch up. And so they have to do what the government says, and maybe that's not the best practice today like it could be, right? It's a best practice 5 years ago. That's a very interesting concept. In the guard business, security guards are paid twice as much as the average guard in the energy sector. Yep. Average guard makes $24,000, you know, and the energy sector guard makes like $40,000.
Yep.
So it's interesting how they put the money into the physical security, which, by the way, no offense to my guard companies because I ran two of them. That's not where we need to be protecting our grid, okay? They're not going to – this isn't a Bond film. They're not going to storm in there out of a helicopter and take over your power plant. They're just going to hack it like they did in the Ukraine last year or the year before and just turn off the city. And, you know, that's what they're going to do here eventually. So that's very interesting that is a vulnerability. I wasn't aware of that. Now, see, Jarvis, I'm not going to feel good going home now. because Torsten gave me something I don't want to know. But my viewers need to know it.
So. On the other hand, the good news is that due to the shortcomings, the industry has come together and works very closely. They're one of the best when it comes to incident response centers, meaning they have their industry associations that share details on attacks. So they have early warning indicators. So together with the financial service industry on that front, they're far advanced. So at least the shortcomings that they're facing, they leverage to get closer together and share more and work closer together to prevent that if one organization got hacked, that the next hopefully won't get hacked because they're sharing the information.
Well, that's good. Now, let's talk about how you contextualize the data. I mean, how is that physically done? Do you take my data that's overflowing and I can't analyze it? Do you stick it in a giant, you know, multi-relational database and do a query and say, look, I found something, and then put that together with what the definition of real time is nowadays? Because people say, oh, we do it in real time. Real time is not always real time.
So we basically ingest your existing internal security intelligence, be it your vulnerability scanners, and here, again, important, not just your network scans, but also your application scans, database scans, and really look at the entire attack surface. And once we aggregate all this data and normalize it, meaning getting rid of the false positives, the noise, we're then overlaying that information with external threat data. And so we have more than 60 sources that we consume. We have our own proprietary technology that goes out into the darknet, looks at hacker forums, their conversations, retrieves, exploits, and malware kits. We're also looking, which is very important, at the vendor side, because our research team has found that a lot of times vulnerabilities are being reported on vendor sites, but they don't find it yet into the National Vulnerability Database. It can be up to 120 days lag time, during which you're in reality exposed to a zero-day vulnerability.
So that's great. So you're kind of going out and scanning the web, for lack of a better term, or data sources, and saying, look, you know, we just found that Cisco put up a white paper on their website that talked about this brand new exploit. And we're going to take that now and put it in our database, because Cisco is going to take 120 days to stick it up to the government. And you're analyzing it. It's such a great idea.
Exactly.
And simple idea. The greatest ideas are the simplest.
And we even take input sources like Twitter or Facebook, where people tweet about particular vulnerabilities, right, or expose particular things. We're doing real-time analysis, contextual analysis on particular patterns and keywords, and immediately consume that and also have that contribute to the overall score that you are developing.
Now, how fast do you do this? Is this real-time in the sense that it, you know, I can do an analysis in a couple hours, or how does that work?
No, it's really real-time. We're looking, as I said, for us, a threat can be here this morning, but can be already gone the next minute. And when you look at the results from the Verizon data breach report, it shows as soon as a vulnerability is exposed, it takes just minutes for the hacker community to exploit that vulnerability. And again, let's go back to what we stated earlier. On average, it takes us today 187 days to fix a vulnerability.
Right.
So it takes them minutes, once it's known, to go after it. It takes us 187 days to fix it.
Wow, that's crazy.
So we have to close that gap, and that's where RiskSense really comes in to really shorten the time to remediation. And the last step of that analysis is really looking at your business criticality. Again, looking at what assets are we looking for. How are the assets connected? Meaning, I might have a server that contains a highly sensitive database where I host PII information. Obviously, that should have a higher priority to get fixed than a same server with the same vulnerability, but it's not connected to anything that holds sensitive information where hackers can really take advantage from. So here you're setting basically priorities based on the risk exposure, based on the impact to your business. And so the final thing that we're providing is really a so-called risk score, cyber risk score, both on the asset level as well as on an organizational level. So I can even compare my different business units. What is their risk exposure? Where do I have to put really my efforts? And if I have an online business unit which contributes 90% of my revenue, and I see that I have the biggest exposure there, obviously that's where I have to put my attention and not on my G&A that looks at employee performance. So these are the things, the product that we're offering allows for different stakeholders to get the information they need. The board and the C-suite is more interested at business information. How does this impact my business? How right. am I exposed? What is my liability? What is the impact for me as an organization? As a security practitioner, we show you a different view. We show you a top five list of the things that need to be fixed today. And we have attribution that is shown, meaning I'm clicking on a malware icon and I see all the details that are related to that high critical vulnerability that is currently being leveraged by hackers in the darknet. And I immediately have the information at my fingertips to assess what that means for my organization. And then important for us is also the mitigation efforts, meaning security ops normally detects and IT remediates. For us, we have to bring these groups together.
Right.
So if I found something that is highly critical as a security ops person from within the same platform, I can issue a ticket, and then I have transparency, meaning if this IT person doesn't touch that ticket, I can now escalate it. So there is some accountability for it. So it really helps me, again, shorten time to remediation. And then for the IT team, we offer playbooks, meaning the IT team often spends weeks to research the findings that they got from the security team because they're less sophisticated and often don't really understand the full scope and language that was submitted to them. So now they're Googling, binging things, and trying to puzzle things together, which costs time again,
right,
and we
right.
don't have time. In our case, we give them playbooks, so it's step-by-step instructions. How can they fix things efficiently? And then, very important, we're not closing the ticket until we have validated that the patch has been efficient, has been really effective, because a lot of times people close a ticket after they apply the patch because they think everything was fine. But we're all human beings who make mistakes. And so by closing it, you might create a blind spot and suddenly be exposed.
What's with the IT guys and their tickets? That's like a 1980s thing. They love their tickets. And if you don't do what they want on the ticket, you don't get hurt. I mean, I send tickets to LinkedIn, to Facebook, Twitter all the time. Your ticket has been received and we'll get back to you. Then it's an auto reply. That's a whole other show. Now, we got a few minutes left. Give me, if you can, without any secrets, maybe a real-time example of how you've solved somebody's problem or caught an exploit and, you know, shut it down real fast.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can share with you one example of one of the largest universities. They are deeply involved in government research projects, so they get a lot of grants from federal government and intelligence community and hold very sensitive information. Obviously, as a university, you have a very unique network exposure because you have faculty members, students that bring in their own devices, and you have to allow them to do that because that's part of your research policy, but it really exposes you. And so this organization really was under pressure from federal government to kind of prove that they have the right security measures in place, and they needed to prove that there's no risk exposure. They were simply overwhelmed. They were doing sampling of their environments. They conducted that on a quarterly basis, but just a small subset of what really entailed their overall attack surface. And even after doing these scans, they did not have any full understanding what is really our exposure. What does that mean to us as an organization? What is really the impact on our operations? And so when they reached out to us, within 2 weeks, we had them up and running. They got their first reports. They saw their risk exposure, and they were immediately able to really take actions. Nowadays, they're doing scans on a weekly basis, and they no longer do sampling. They do continuous diagnostics and mitigations. So they're following the NIST concept that's propagated. They are really looking at their entire attack surface. And as a result, they were able to reduce the time it takes to address critical vulnerabilities from detection to remediation by whooping 90%. And so that is that difference between the 187 days and the minutes that we talked about earlier. And so they're now able to really go back to their auditors and say, here's our risk exposure. They can do that any day, any given time. They have real insight into their exposure. And really allows them to align their resources to really mitigate their risk. And that didn't exist before at all. They were basically flying blind. And now they know exactly where they are, what they need to do. They're able to strengthen their security programs and really time to remediation. And that is the sole thing that counts nowadays. It's that race against the time to close that open door of opportunity before the hacker can take advantage of it.
Torsten George, risksense.com, one of my new favorite products. I feel good after the show. Do you feel good, Jarvis?
Yeah,
this is a great solution. It's common sense, and it works. And I encourage people to check out their website and give Torsten a buzz. We're going to go out a few minutes early, Torsten. So give us your website. It's risksense.com, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Right. And we will be at RSA conference, so feel free to visit our booth there. We're in the South Hall, booth 2816, not just to get to know us a little bit better, but stop by, pick up some gifts to share with friends and family.
Oh, yeah, I got to get the bling. The bling is swag? Swag or bling? Which one is it, Jarvis? I think it's bling or swag. It's all good. Torsten, thanks again. Always great to have you on the show. And tune in next week for another exciting episode of Security Guy Radio. Until then, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube. Let's see. What's the other one? Tumblr. I don't know. We got like 9 sites. Just go to securityguyradio.com. That's easier, okay? We'll see you next Monday night. Good night.